With fall in full swing, more moments call for more comfort. Mack Weldon's got you covered with comfortable, easy-to-layer clothes designed for cooler days and timeless style. Their new Ace line, inspired by their best-selling sweatpants, combines everyday comfort with long-lasting and confident looks you can count on. For over a decade, Mack Weldon has designed timeless, innovative menswear to help you move through the day with confidence. Not flashy, just classic, always in style, and made from the world's most comfortable performance materials. Fall into comfort with Mack Weldon's Ace Collection. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order of $125 or more with promo code MAC25. That's MackWeldon.com, promo code MAC25.
Welcome, Deep Divers. Today, we're really setting out to uncover the many, many layers of someone who's just consistently shaped American comedy. And social commentary, too.
Right. Across decades, across different platforms. He's kind of everywhere when you look.
Exactly. From, you know, behind the scenes, crafting these iconic TV shows, to being right out front, grabbing audiences with that sharp wit. We are talking about the truly prolific Alistair Larry Wilmore III.
Larry Wilmore.
Yeah.
So our mission today really is to kind of distill the essence of his, well, incredible career. It's so multifaceted. We're pulling from a really detailed biographical account. A source that gives us this rich picture of his life and work.
The deep source.
He'll trace his path, you know, from those early years through being this influential writer, producer, comedian, host, and really dig into that unique perspective he brings, especially around American politics, African-American culture, pop culture.
Mm-hmm. It's more than just comedy.
It is. It's like he's this profound cultural observer wrapped in a comedian's package.
That's a great way to put it. And what makes his career so compelling, and what we really want to get into today, is just how he takes all these different experiences, personal, professional, cultural,
all of it,
and synthesizes them into stuff that's like genuinely hilarious, but also really insightful. Yeah. We're not just going to list his resume, you know?
Right.
We need to look beyond that public face, understand the currents underneath, the themes that keep popping up in his, well, very long career, peeling back the layers, sort of.
To get at that core comedic philosophy.
Exactly. What makes him tick, comedically speaking.
And for you listening in, think of this deep dive as kind of a shortcut. It's a chance to get a really rich, nuanced understanding of how one person can make such a mark on so many different parts of media.
Yeah, it's impressive.
You'll find out how his own story, especially being this self-proclaimed nerd from Pomona, actually became this key part of his voice, that unique sound he has.
That nerd thing is fascinating.
Totally. By the time we're done, you'll have, I think, a much deeper feel for how American comedy and social commentary have evolved over, what, the last four decades? Yeah. And Wilmore's crucial role in that.
Yeah, he's been right in the thick of it.
So, okay, let's unpack this. Larry Wilmore's story. It really is this amazing weave of, like, behind-the-scenes genius and front-and-center charisma. Let's start right at the beginning. Because his early life, well, it offers some genuinely insightful clues about the kind of creative person he'd become.
The roots, yeah.
The Alistair Larry Wilmore III, born in L.A., October 30, 1961. But he grew up mostly in suburban Pomona, California.
Pomona. Yeah.
I mean, not the first place you think of as a comedy incubator.
Right.
But it was definitely the setting for his unique view of the world. His family came from Evanston, Illinois, originally.
Oh, interesting. Midwest roots.
Yeah. Settled in Pomona.
Yeah.
And he was raised Catholic, the third of six kids.
Six kids. Wow.
Can you imagine the daily life in that house? It's like a constant masterclass in watching people negotiating.
Oh, absolutely. And growing up Catholic, one of six, you can really see how that kind of environment just sharpens your observation skills. You're constantly navigating people, right?
Totally.
Subtle cues, the sort of moral frameworks, the cultural stuff that shapes a community. It often makes people really good at seeing the humor and maybe the hypocrisy in everyday life.
Which is fuel for a comedian.
Exactly. Vital fuel for a comedian, a satirist. It probably gave him this really rich inner world to draw from for his specific kind of humor, the kind that often looks at, you know, how people interact, the unspoken rules.
That foundation, that cultural background. You think that's key to how he understands cultural dynamics later?
I think it has to be. That communal, culturally specific upbringing. It feels like the bedrock for the nuanced way he'd later weave culture into his comedy.
And speaking of nuance, maybe one of the most surprising things, and I think really important for you listening, is his whole self-proclaimed nerd identity as a kid.
Right. Not the usual comic origin story.
Not at all. He wasn't just kind of interested in brainy stuff. He was deep into science, magic, sci-fi, fantasy.
So like full-on geek culture.
Totally. You got to picture this. The guy who'd become the senior black correspondent, challenging ideas about race and power, spending his childhood casting imaginary spells or exploring alien worlds in his head.
It really messes with your expectations, doesn't it?
It absolutely does. It just shows the complexity there right from the start.
And that nerd thing, it isn't just a fun fact. It's actually pretty pivotal in shaping his comedic voice. He talked about this himself, I think it was on NPR.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he described being a nerd and black. And he pointed out how, traditionally, the black comic figure was often expected to have this certain kind of bravado, maybe,
yeah,
strength.
That sort of performative masculinity.
Exactly. Rooted in what society kind of expected. Wilmore embracing his intellectual, maybe more introverted nerd side. That was a real shift, a significant one.
So it wasn't rejecting his identity, but expanding it.
Precisely. Expanding what black identity could look like in comedy. This figure, comfortable being smart, observational, it opened up space for different kinds of voices, different perspectives within African-American comedy.
More introspective, maybe.
Analytical.
Yeah, maybe less overtly performative humor could come forward, reflecting a wider range of experiences, you know? Being able to critique and satirize without always needing to shout. That intellectual distance, it became like a comedic superpower for him.
Like dissecting things with a scalpel instead of a hammer.
That's a good analogy. The precision of a scientist applied to cultural absurdities.
So after that intellectually packed childhood, he graduates from Damien High School in Laverne back in 79, then heads off to Cal Poly Pomona studying theater arts.
So the performance bug a bit early.
Clearly. But you know how it goes with creative types? Academia wasn't the final stop. He eventually dropped out, made that big pivot.
Towards chasing his passions.
Yeah.
Acting and stand-up comedy.
Oh, okay. Took the leap.
Yeah, that early dedication. That willingness to just go for it. It really shows this clear commitment to entertainment pretty young. He was ready for that unpredictable world. It wasn't just a side thing. It was like his calling.
He knew what he wanted.
Seems like it. And from those formative years where he's developing this unique way of seeing things, his ambition starts turning into actual work pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
His first steps into the industry, this is back in the 80s, were, you know, small roles, film, TV acting gigs.
Paying the dues.
Totally. One notable early one, though, that gave him exposure to how TV gets made was a recurring part as a cop on The Facts of Life.
The Facts of Life. Okay, I remember that.
Right. So these small acting jobs, they were like an apprenticeship.
Yeah.
Learning the rhythm of a TV set from the inside.
And what's really interesting there is how quickly he moved from, you know, being in front of the camera to actually writing. That suggests a real drive to shape the story, not just deliver lines.
Good point.
So early to mid-90s, he starts making moves on writing staffs for really different kinds of shows, too. He wrote for the talk show Into the Night with Rick Dees.
Talk show writing, that's a different skill set. Quick jokes, topical stuff.
Totally different muscle. But then he moves to In Living Color.
Whoa. Okay, In Living Color was huge. Game-changing sketch comedy.
Absolutely massive. Pushed boundaries, launched careers. And here's a cool family connection. His younger brother, Mark Wilmore.
No way.
Yeah, Mark was also a writer on In Living Color and even became a cast member.
Talent runs in the family, clearly.
Seems so. So this early exposure talk shows, sketch comedy, it gave him this incredibly solid training ground for the super versatile career he ended up having.
Learning to adapt his comedy style.
Exactly. Pivot his sensibility for different formats, but still keep his own voice.
And that grounding in comedy storytelling, especially for a wide audience, just got deeper and deeper through the 90s. He became this, like, go-to writer and producer for a whole string of really popular black sitcoms.
Yeah, shows that were big deals culturally, not just ratings-wise.
Right. Shows that defined a generation for a lot of people. Sister, Sister.
Classic.
He even did a little cameo as a bus driver in one episode, which is fun.
Huh. Didn't know that.
The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Global phenomenon. Still is.
And The Jamie Foxx Show.
Right. Showcasing Jamie Foxx early on.
These were all really visible, culturally important shows. They cemented his skill in crafting stories that were funny, engaging, and connected with a huge, diverse audience, especially audiences looking for, you know, authentic portrayals of black family life, young adulthood.
He was learning to make humor that wasn't just funny, but also reflected a specific cultural viewpoint.
Exactly, making it resonate.
And if you zoom out, look at the bigger picture. that whole period was just absolutely critical for Wilmore's development. It wasn't just about writing jokes in a vacuum.
No, it was more than that.
It was understanding the whole TV comedy machine. Character arcs, plot pacing, the rhythm you need to keep jokes landing across a whole season.
Building those worlds.
Building worlds, developing characters people cared about, landing punchlines within those established formats. This deep dive into successful comedy TV, especially shows focused on Black experiences, was just essential groundwork for him becoming a showrunner later.
He gave him the toolkit.
Absolutely. It meant he could eventually not just write for shows, but create and lead his own acclaimed series. Because he knew the scaffolding, the art, and the mechanics of building a hit, he got the heartbeat of the sitcom.
Which leads us right into his emergence as a creator. This period really cements that shift from writer to like full-on creative force, a real showrunner.
Mm-hmm.
1999, he takes this huge leap, co-creates the animated comedy The PJs.
With Eddie Murphy. Yeah.
He didn't just write for it. He was executive producer until it ended in 2001. That's a major step up. Shows he could develop, conceptualize, lead a whole series.
Taking the reins.
Yeah. Total command of the creative process, way beyond just writing scripts.
And then The Bernie Mac Show.
Yes. Pivotal.
Not just pivotal for him, but really a landmark in TV comedy. Wilmore creates it, executive produces it, and then wins a primetime Emmy for writing the pilot episode in 2002.
That Emmy win must have been huge.
Huge. A massive validation of his talent, his vision, but the show's impact. It went way beyond that one award. It picked up this incredible list of honors. A Peabody Award.
Peabody is prestigious.
Yeah.
Recognizes real excellence.
Exactly. A TCA Award for Outstanding Achievement in Comedy, a couple of Teen Choice Awards, an NAACP Image Award, a Humanitas Prize.
Humanitas, that's for promoting human dignity, right?
Yeah, it shows depth. And a Satellite Award for Best TV Series, Musical, or Comedy.
Wow, that's a stack of awards.
It really underscores the impact. The Bernie Mac Show wasn't just popular. It was seen as groundbreaking, respected comedic art. And Wilmore did something really innovative with Bernie Mac breaking the fourth wall.
Right, talking directly to the camera.
But not just for quick jokes. It was to let us into his character's head. That sort of exasperated, vulnerable, deeply human inner monologue of this Black patriarch trying to handle family life.
It felt really raw and honest.
Totally. That device gave this unvarnished look at Black family dynamics, mixing the humor with this incredible honesty. Critics loved it. Audiences loved it. It just elevated Wilmore's status. Creative visionary. Proved he could entertain and push comedy boundaries to get at deeper truths.
And his momentum just kept going.
Wow.
He also teamed up with Whoopi Goldberg.
The legend herself.
Created and produced her sitcom, Whoopi. Another huge name on his collaboration list. Shows he can work with and build projects around these established comedy giants.
Definitely. And we absolutely cannot forget his role as a consulting producer on the American version of The Office.
Oh, right. From 2005 to 2007.
Yeah, during that time when the show was really finding its footing, becoming that cultural giant. And what's really telling is he also appeared in that classic Diversity Day episode.
As Mr. Brown, the diversity consultant. I remember him.
Exactly. Yeah. And it wasn't just a quick acting part. It gave the subtle but really potent glimpse into his comedic take on race and culture, even before he had his own big platforms to explore it explicitly.
How so?
Well, his character, Mr. Brown, has this sort of awkward sincerity that kind of satirizes how corporations handle diversity, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it still engages with the topic. It showed his voice. Even just consulting and doing a guest spot was already shaping that kind of sharp observational humor, that social critique that later became his signature.
Cutting to the uncomfortable truth with a smile, almost.
Yeah, very disarming approach.
So looking back at that whole stretch, late 90s through mid 2000s,
mm-hmm.
What's the big takeaway about Wilmore's career path?
It just definitively cemented him as this creative powerhouse. Not just in Hollywood, but as a significant cultural voice.
No longer just a writer.
Not just a writer. A true creative force, able to conceptualize, lead, shape entire comedic worlds that won awards and really connected with people. He'd arrived. Master of the craft and the business side of TV.
Okay, so now we shift from the guy powerfully pulling strings behind the scenes to Larry Wilmore stepping right into the national spotlight as a performer, where a lot of us probably first really noticed him.
Yeah, The Daily Show.
It's exactly. That move happened with his regular, really impactful appearances on Comedy Central's The Daily Show. From 2006 up to 2014, he became this familiar, often beloved face doing their signature satirical news thing.
It was the perfect stage for his kind of humor. Cool. And what's so great is not just that he was there, but the impact and the self-aware humor baked right into his official title.
The senior black correspondent.
Right. But even that changed, didn't it? After Obama's election, it would sometimes become like the senior executive commander-in-chief who happens to be black correspondent.
Which is hilarious in itself.
It is. The title alone was this brilliant piece of satire. It immediately flagged his unique perspective, right? Positioning him as the designated, maybe slightly eye-rolling voice on issues around the black experience.
But also kind of poking fun at the media.
Exactly. Right. Poking fun at how media tends to pigeonhole people based on identity.
Yeah.
It was clever, subversive. Right away, it signaled his whole approach to commentary, using humor to point out these deeper societal things.
And his delivery was often so deadpan.
That deadpan delivery was key. Created this fantastic contrast with the often absurd or just plain uncomfortable truths he was laying out.
And his segments weren't just general commentary. They were often really focused on humorous, but also quite piercing observations about being black in America.
Yeah, and tackling sensitive stuff.
Yeah, he wasn't afraid. Did it with wit, intelligence. Often used that intellectual distance to highlight the absurdities. Like, remember that phrase he coined, "I'd rather we got casinos"?
Oh, yeah, from that segment back in, what, January 2007?
That's the one. And it wasn't just a throwaway line. It stuck. Became the title of his political humor book in 2009.
Right, I remember that book.
And Booklist described it perfectly. Called it like a faux collection of articles, essays, exploring the more ludicrous angles on race. That captures his blend of funny and sharp critique so well.
Taking a specific observation and making it speak to something bigger.
Exactly, making it resonate.
So this really brings up a crucial question for us. How did playing that role on The Daily Show, the senior black correspondent, set him up for the huge challenge of hosting his own late night show?
Yeah, that's a big leap.
Those 8 years as a correspondent, it was like a masterclass. Developing, refining his unique voice for political and cultural satire. He learned how to take these super complex social issues.
And boil them down.
Boil them down into concise, funny, digestible bits. He perfected that deadpan wit, talking straight to the camera, creating that connection with the audience.
That sense of shared understanding.
Yeah. And the rhetorical questions, the understated punchlines, holding on to an ironic idea. That mix of humor and critique delivered nightly on The Daily Show was a perfect training ground.
Forging the host he would become.
Absolutely. It let him shift from just reacting to the news to actually shaping the conversation. He was ready to lead a show with his unique point of view.
Which he then did. Building right on that foundation, he takes the massive step into the host's chair. The Nightly Show with Larry Wilmore.
January 19, 2015.
Launches then. Takes over that huge 11:30 p.m. slot on Comedy Central. Right after the Colbert Report ended.
He had shoes to fill.
Huge. And it wasn't just a random new show. It was explicitly a Daily Show spinoff. Produced by Jon Stewart's company, Buzzboy Productions. So that strong link to that whole influential comedy family was right there.
Inheriting a legacy, really.
Definitely. Not just the time slot.
And the format of The Nightly Show, it was different from Colbert's single character thing. It was a panel talk show, right?
Yeah. Often had multiple guests, different backgrounds. Allowed for more, maybe more nuanced discussion of issues.
And him taking that slot, I mean, that was significant, not just for him, but for diversity and late night overall. A black host heading up a major satire show when that was still pretty rare.
It was a statement.
It absolutely was. Blech. The show ran for 259 episodes, then got canceled August 15, 2016. Relatively short run in that tough late night world.
Yeah, it's a brutal landscape.
But its impact was recognized. Got nominated for 2 NAACP Image Awards in 2016, Outstanding Talk Series, Outstanding Host. So even though it didn't last forever, people saw its value, saw Wilmore's distinct presence.
He was trying something different.
Genuinely different in a very crowded field.
And even after The Nightly Show,
yeah,
he stayed in the late night game, just in a more limited way, hosted that short series on Peacock, just called Wilmore.
Right, adapting to streaming as things shifted.
Shows his flexibility.
And if you look at his hosting style, the themes across those shows, Nightly Wilmore, you see this really consistent kind of fearless thread.
Like what?
Like how he just kept weaving in observations about race, religion, sex, tackling subjects other hosts might avoid.
Yeah, he didn't shy away.
Not at all. And that wasn't new for him either. He'd already dug into those complex, often tricky themes in his 2012 Showtime special, race, religion, and sex, which fascinatingly was shot in Salt Lake City.
Interesting choice of location for that.
Right. So his hosting gigs let him bring that well-honed, multifaceted perspective to a regular audience, sparking discussions that were timely but also deeply personal, always challenging viewers to think, using humor as the way in.
Using the platform to start conversations, not just tell jokes.
Exactly that.
Now, probably one of the most high-profile, and let's be honest, provocative moments for him in the spotlight was headlining the White House Correspondents' Dinner, April 30, 2016.
Oh, yeah. That dinner is always under a microscope.
Totally. The whole country, especially the political and media world, is watching,
yeah.
Judging every single joke the comedian makes about the president, the press, DC culture. It's a pressure cooker.
And that particular dinner definitely became controversial. It's specifically because of his use of, well, a very charged word.
Mm-hmm.
Will Moore got a lot of heat for using the N-word, specifically the gut ending when talking to President Obama. He said, "Barry, you did it, my nigga."
Yeah, that line caused an immediate stir.
Huge stir. Widely reported, intensely debated. You had pieces in the Washington Post, Detroit Free Press, all covering the backlash, using that word, especially there, in front of that specific audience and the president. A lot of people saw it as shocking, crossing a line, inappropriate.
But crucially, our source material also gives us Will Moore's side of it, his defense, which is really important context here.
Absolutely.
He talked about it with Al Sharpton afterwards, and he said, basically, "I wanted to make a statement more than a joke." He said, "I really wanted to explain the historical implications of the Obama presidency from my point of view."
So not just for shock value or even just a joke, in his telling.
Right. He framed it as deliberate commentary, an attempt to capture that complex mix of pride, familiarity, maybe that sense of shared achievement that many in the Black community felt about Obama's presidency, using language that, you know, within certain contexts carries a specific kind of affectionate communal meaning.
Which brings us to this incredibly complex question, doesn't it? About comedy's role in commentary, about language, boundaries, public discourse, especially in a setting like that.
Yes, thorny.
And without taking a stance on whether it was right or wrong, we have to consider the implications. His choice, his stated reason. Was it a calculated move to spark a difficult, maybe uncomfortable conversation about race, power, how language works?
Or was it a miscalculation? Did the word itself, regardless of intent, just overshadow everything else and turn people off?
Exactly. His choice, his explanation. It forces you to think about the power of words, the specific cultural context, how different people hear and interpret charged language. It really highlights how one moment in comedy can encapsulate these huge societal tensions, identity politics, debates about who gets to say what.
It leaves you thinking about the complexity of that single moment. Unforgettable, really.
Definitely unforgettable. A major moment in comedy history, for better or worse.
So even while Larry Wilmore was stepping out front as a correspondent and host, he never really left his roots behind the camera. That influence as a producer, a co-creator, just kept going.
Yeah.
Shows his lasting impact on shaping TV, even after his own late night shows ended.
Still a major player behind the scenes.
Totally. Like, he was an executive producer for Black-ish on ABC from 2014 to 2015.
Right. Another connection to those groundbreaking shows about contemporary Black family life. Smart, funny stuff.
Exactly.
And that role with Black-ish was really just a warm-up for another absolutely huge, really influential contribution. Co-creating, writing, and executive producing Insecure for HBO.
Insecure. Debuted in 2016. Just massive.
Massive. Co-created with the brilliant Issa Rae, its impact was just immediate, profound, kind of defined a whole new wave on TV.
It felt so fresh.
Totally fresh. Got tons of recognition. NAACP Image Award nominations in 2017 for Outstanding Comedy Series, Outstanding Writing, MTV Movie and TV Award nom for Show of the Year.
Deservedly so.
It was praised everywhere for being so authentic, funny, relatable, showing the everyday lives of modern Black women dealing with careers, friends, relationships in L.A. Wilmore being involved made sure it kept that sharp comedy edge while diving into really culturally significant themes.
It showed he still had his finger on the pulse.
Absolutely. His relevance, his eye for culturally important TV that audiences were hungry for, especially those looking for a real nuanced representation that was often missing elsewhere. It wasn't just a hit show. It was like a cultural landmark, redefined comedic storytelling.
And he stayed involved in that universe too, right? With Grown-ish.
Yeah, the Black-ish spinoff. He was a writer and co-creator for that too, running from 2018 to 2024.
So continuing to develop stories about young Black Americans figuring out adulthood, college, identity, extending that comedic and cultural legacy.
And what's so striking when you look at all these projects, Black-ish, Insecure, Grown-ish, is how Wilmore consistently throws his comedic talent and cultural insight behind stuff that doesn't just entertain. It actively pushes boundaries, offers diverse, often ignored perspectives.
He seems drawn to those kinds of stories.
Seems intentional, right? Whether it's family dynamics, millennial struggles, coming of age. He chooses or helps create shows that tackle contemporary issues with depth, humor, and real understanding of specific cultural experiences, and they consistently get awards for it.
Shows this clear drive to use his skills to shape meaningful narratives.
Yeah, narratives that are fun and culturally resonant. He really understands the evolving PV landscape and what audiences want, more authentic, reflective stories. And he knows how to find and nurture the talent, like Issa Rae, who can tell them.
So as that media landscape kept changing, shifting, Larry Wilmore, always adaptable, moves smoothly into the audio world, embraces podcasting, which was relatively new for his voice back then.
Right, in May 2017.
He launches his podcast, Larry Wilmore, Black on the Air, part of the Ringer Network.
Which was a smart move, joining an established network.
Definitely. And it showed he was willing to explore these new ways to connect with people, deliver his commentary.
And the podcast itself, Black on the Air, it feels like such a natural fit for him, doesn't it? The format, the content.
Totally. What's his setup like?
Well, he dives into current events, giving his usual nuanced take, and he does these really insightful interviews with all sorts of interesting guests, politicians, journalists, artists, other comedians.
So a mix of commentary and conversation.
Exactly. And this audio-only format gives him a kind of freedom, maybe. Freedom from TV cameras, tight time slots, the intense glare of live events. He can go deeper, have longer, more reflective conversations.
More room to breathe, maybe.
Yeah. And it worked. Its success was pretty immediate. Time magazine, pretty respected critics over there, they ranked it in the top five of their 10 best podcasts list for 2017.
Wow, top five right out of the gate.
Yeah. It just underlines how well his voice, his insights translate. He connects with audiences and delivers compelling, smart content across totally different platforms. Proves his style works just as powerfully in that intimate audio space.
He found another great avenue for his unique way of engaging.
Definitely. Vital space.
So thinking about his whole career arc, it makes sense to look at his comedic influences, too. They kind of give you a window into how his own style was built.
Yeah, who shaped him?
Well, he's mentioned legends like Johnny Carson.
Carson, the king of cool, calm delivery, master of the late night stage.
Exactly. Then there's Richard Pryor and Eddie Murphy.
Oh, boundary pushers, fearless stand-up, tackling race, class, sex head-on. Change the game.
Totally unvarnished honesty. And then, of course, Jon Stewart, his colleague, his mentor from The Daily Show.
Stewart, yeah. The master of satirical news commentary, blending humor and sharp political insight seamlessly.
So you have those four major influences.
And you can really see bits and pieces of all of them in Wilmore's work, can't you? From Carson, maybe that composed, often deadpan hosting style, lets the humor land with that subtle, smart punch.
Yeah, I see that.
From Pryor and Murphy, definitely that fearlessness, tackling the tough stuff, race, religion, sex, with both irreverence but also real honesty. Not afraid of making people uncomfortable.
Right.
And from Stewart, obviously that skill in pulling truth and humor out of the news cycle, crafting that sharp satirical commentary on what's happening right now.
So he's like a blend, synthesizing those traditions.
A true synthesis, yeah. Taking what worked for him from each and making his own unique mix. And it's also super telling, I think, that he says he finds inspiration just watching real human behavior on the subway, in coffee shops.
Not just from the headlines.
Right. It points to how grounded his comedy is. Observational. Believing that the biggest insights often hide in the smallest, most ordinary moments. That's a direct line back to those observational greats who influenced him.
And just as a final nod to his overall impact, beyond specific shows.
Yeah.
He got that Austin Film Festival Award in 2018 for extraordinary contribution to television.
That's a big one. Lifetime achievement territory.
Exactly. It shows he's recognized not just for hits, but for his sustained deep influence on the whole medium. Pushing boundaries, starting conversations for decades.
A career dedicated to that.
Definitely.
And if we quickly touch on his personal life again, just connecting the dots. His 20-year marriage to actress Leilani Jones. They had two kids, John and Lauren. That provided a base during his big rise behind the scenes.
Right.
Then his divorce in 2015, moving from California to New York for The Nightly Show, that lines up with this very public, very demanding phase of his career.
A lot of upheaval personally and professionally at the same time.
Yeah. And while the sources don't spell out exactly how those personal things directly fueled his work, you know, major life changes, divorce, moving, starting a new chapter, they often do feed an artist's work.
Go sure, ahead. Adds layers.
Adds layers of vulnerability, maybe resilience, a different perspective. Even if it's channeled indirectly into his commentary or creativity, it can add that depth, that authenticity, makes his voice even more relatable.
So, okay, if we pull way back, connect all these threads, Larry Wilmore's whole career, it just shows this consistent, unbroken line of insightful, often satirical, always thought-provoking commentary.
Yeah, a clear through line.
Whether he's talking race, politics, pop culture, he comes at it with this distinctive voice, smart, sharp, and undeniably funny. A true master, moving between roles, but keeping that singular vision. Hashtag, tag, tag, outro. So as we kind of wrap up this deep dive, let's just take a beat to recap the incredible range of Larry Wilmore's career. It's really something.
He really is.
We've watched him go from this self-described nerd in Pomona
right.
to being a prolific writer, an Emmy-winning creator who changed sitcoms,
yeah.
a groundbreaking correspondent challenging norms, a late-night host who wasn't afraid to say the uncomfortable stuff, and now this influential podcast voice.
Quite the journey.
His whole path is just marked by this unwavering commitment to insightful, often provocative humor. The kind that makes you think just as hard as it makes you laugh. He really shows the power of having a unique perspective.
And his unique contribution to modern comedy, to social commentary, it's just undeniable. Larry Wilmore has this rare gift, doesn't he? Tackling complex, touchy subjects with both incredible nuance and sharp wit.
It's a balancing act.
A tough balancing act. He consistently challenges norms, pushes boundaries on what we expect from public discussion. His career really shows how one person can not only shift seamlessly between all these creative roles, writing, producing, performing, hosting, but also leave this lasting, deep mark on so many platforms.
It makes each medium richer.
Exactly. Enriches each medium with his particular view, showing how powerful a consistent, authentic voice can be, even as the media world keeps changing around us.
Okay, so we'll leave you, our listeners, with this final thought to chew on. Given Wilmore's amazing track record for kind of scenting and shaping the cultural conversation and his really successful move into podcasting, what's next?
Good question.
What new conversations, what new comedic forms might he pioneer? And maybe more broadly, what lessons about being adaptable, about keeping your voice strong and true in this ever-changing media world, and about the real power of smart humor? What can we take away from his truly remarkable journey?
Lots to think about there.
Definitely. Thanks for diving deep with us today.